Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Ford, featuring Wi-Fi connectivity with available sync and My Ford Touch. Now your car can be a Wi-Fi hotspot. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly, all streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 99. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
Some people celebrate their 100th episode, but frankly, I think 99 is a lot cooler.
Tom, penultimate episode, honestly. This is a big deal. We are going to celebrate in ways people have no idea. And when I say that, I really just mean we'll do a regular show next week. But I'm really looking forward to that.
I'll tell you how we're celebrating 99. We got two great guests with us today. Josh Walrath, co-host of PC Perspective and editor for PCPer.com. Welcome to Forecast.
Thanks for having me this evening.
Thanks for being here. I know it was a little bit of a rush to get here on time and be on the show. We're glad you made it.
Yeah, well, I'm ecstatic too, and so's the server that I was working on.
How is the server?
The server is well, it's duct taped, so okay. I'm hoping it'll last this week.
Good. We hope so, too. He may get called away to fix that server again in the middle of the show, just to be warned. Sarah Houghton, librarian, author, speaker, iconoclast, and proud geek girl from librarianandblack.net. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you on. We just had you on Tech News Today, and here you are again. It's great to see you again.
I've become a gadfly.
You're not a gadfly. You're a golden fly.
Love that. Good save.
No, that's a really piss poor save. Let's go to a prediction from a listener. This one comes from Paul, who is also Rowski in IRC chat, live.twit.tv, or IRC.twit.tv. Paul says, I imagine a purely technological species once existed on Mars. Robots that evolved from complex metallic compounds. I see an environment inhospitable to humanity with creatures that live off a supermagnetic field. The fast-spinning core begins to slow, starving these beings of nourishment who never learned to change sunlight into a usable energy. They created biological life to be adaptable and chemically powered, using prehistoric Earth as a petri dish. They eventually created us in their own image before ceasing to exist. All that is left is a cold, dead, and rust-filled Mars of a once-thriving culture of intelligent beings. My prediction is we will one day discover evidence of this below the surface of Mars.
All right. He may have written a better version of Total Recall, but I'm gonna say that the idea that robots evolved from nothing is very Transformer-ist in its ideas, right? That's kind of the idea behind Transformers, that they're non-organic, but they're these living beings that are made of metal and parts and pieces. It would explain why we can't seem to survive on that planet, yet when we look at it, it feels like we should be able to, and so much science fiction is geared around living on the red planet. But I think he's wrong, but I absolutely love the notion. I think it sounds great.
Do you buy any of this notion, Josh?
That's certainly interesting, but it's a big universe. All kinds of different life forms can be out there. I'm not sure how metallic beings can feed off magnetism, but we'll work with it, and I'll start on the screenplay.
Excellent. It does sound like a good movie, doesn't it? Yeah. What about you, Sarah? Any evidence that this could any knowledge that this could possibly
no
magnetic fields? No.
No. Nothing. I don't buy it. Nothing with magnetic fields. Will
yeah.
Ever.
You know, I think I liked this prediction more than I think it's possible.
Yeah.
Again, totally going back to what Josh said. Good screenplay, but I'm not sure we'll ever find it. I don't know that robots. I'm trying to make sure I'm not being bio prejudiced here, but I don't think robots could evolve on their own.
Right.
Like not robots the way we think of them.
Right, or evolution is the way we think of it.
This would make a great song, though, because, you know, Mars Lobster actually will stick to magnet this time.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Very well played. Yeah, I just love Mars as a motif. So his idea, any ideas that are set on Mars, I'm always a big fan of. You know, ever since I was a kid, it's the desert planet. It's Tatooine on a different planet. And I've always sort of been in love with that planet. So I've no problem with his fiction or any other.
I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard George Lucas based Tatooine on his visits to Mars.
Oh, well, there you go.
Let's move on to our short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner rather than later, maybe in the next few years. And Sarah, we will start with you. What is your short-term prediction?
All right. So a disclaimer, this is my first and only library-oriented prediction, but I had to get one in.
Okay, yeah. So but people shouldn't assume just because you're a librarian that all your predictions are going to be about libraries. But
right.
The first one will
be. The first one is. I'm sorry.
That's not a trend.
No,
okay.
It's not a trend.
Got it.
So it's something that we're already seeing happen, and it's just beginning to happen in large quantity, which is librarians are becoming more creation spaces for information rather than consumption spaces mm-hmm. for information. And so you're seeing a trend away from physical and digital collections into a place where we give our communities the tools to create their own physical and digital collections or to archive them or to curate them. And there are so many good projects going on. The Fayetteville Free Library launched Hackerspace earlier mm-hmm. earlier this week, which was just incredible. And there's another great project called the Library Lab, which a colleague of mine worked on, which is, I can best describe it as just kind of these little pods that are completely configurable. They're open source designs. They're all flat printed, kind of like you get IKEA furniture out of a box.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make it however big or however small you want. Each pod has a purpose, whether it's video creation, whether it's creating your own movies or your own music or your own publications or printing books or whatever it might be. And I think that's what we're seeing libraries start to invest in is the technology and the infrastructure to let people in our communities create. And therefore, the library becomes a place of a collection of their own creations instead of all of this stuff that we've pre-selected for the community.
Is the stuff you're... Well, okay. So is that movement geared mostly towards kids? Or do you see it as... Is it more far-reaching than that? Is it for everybody? Well, obviously, it's for everybody. But is it kids who will benefit the most? They're the ones that'll... Have their imagination sparked by sitting down in one of these pods and realizing, wow, look what I can create here?
I think that kids will gravitate toward it more because they're more, in general, comfortable with the technology that we're talking about. And I think they're perhaps more open to this different idea of a library not being what a library has been to their parents or their grandparents mm-hmm. for decades and centuries. But I do see a lot of interest in this coming from adults as well, particularly with, 3D printing in libraries and stuff like that. I mean, that's definitely not isolated just to kids.
Hmm. I'm kind of in love with this this idea that librarians will become the great keepers of... This is way science fiction, and I realize I'm painting it too much from my experience with reading too much science fiction. But I love the idea that librarians are going to become not... somebody who is the stereotypical, everyone be quiet because everyone's trying to study, or even the person just checks out books, or the person that makes sure this is in the right place, or any of those things. I picture them becoming in the near, far and far flung future, like keepers of the knowledge. Like this idea that you could go to a library and this person would be wise beyond all wisdom and would know where all the archives are, would maybe even be digitally patched in to that. To that space. I realize this is way past.
So instead of that 1940s stereotype of the button down, angry old maid, librarians become wizards.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, they know where the most important book is hidden. I'm kind of basing this a little on sort of Harry Potter, and I'm basing it on the idea that someone's in charge of the archives, and in the archives lies the secret to humanity or its downfall or whatever. And only the librarians seem to know, and they're all wearing flowing robes and hoods. And
we do that.
This is only going to work.
It's all behind closed doors. We have those little secret rooms, and we have that secret thing to save humanity. It's just in a place you don't know about.
Ah, yep. Okay. Well, that makes sense. So, Josh, what's your...
If Jean-Paul Gaultier actually designed the clothes for the librarians. I mean, he did all the Fifth Element stuff. Can you just imagine these people swooping around? And maybe Chris Tucker even. He would be a great librarian.
Yes, or and they all have some kind of ancient martial arts experience. I mean, there's just cool stuff happening with librarians in the future. I'm really excited to see how it all plays out. But, Josh, you work in technology, obviously. The idea that a library could be more of a creation space for kids or adults or whoever, driving them more towards, you know, technological parity and that sort of thing. That seems like a good idea, yeah?
Well, yeah, but I think that if you kind of boil everything down, that's something that libraries have done throughout the centuries. How many times with people who have made just huge leaps in science and literature have said, well, yeah, I spent my Saturdays at the library and my teachers were not so much the people at school, but Voltaire and all these other philosophers and science fiction writers and people who are visionaries and not just them. So while we're going to have absolutely more accessibility to more ideas I think the previous work is still going to be kind of the same. Am I making any sense here?
Hmm. So you don't think it'll really change that much? It's not like it's going to be...
I think it'll look different, but it's still going to be a center of learning. It's going to be a center of growth, and it's going to be kind of a garden to plant the creativity of the next generation. So I certainly hope that it becomes a lot more popular to go back to the library than what it is now. But,
our numbers have been rocketing through the stratosphere. Like, seriously, numbers have been going up like crazy, especially with the economy going down. We never saw a downturn ever.
Josh does a thing that I'm sure you hear a lot about, but I'm doing the same thing. And my guts tell me, again, the stereotype is that the library as it stands today is on the decline, but you say that's not true.
Absolutely not. No, numbers on everything. On, for example, like our digital content use doubles or triples every year. Our door count goes up 20-30% every year. I mean, it's just, you know, people are coming in and people are using the digital stuff in increasing numbers every single year without fail.
Mm. And are libraries keeping up? Go ahead, Josh.
Sorry, that's great, I guess, because I'm from Wyoming. It's fairly rural area, only 550 or 650,000 people in the entire dang state, and our library systems are seeing the exact opposite. With kind of the digital age, everybody's got an internet connection. We're seeing less and less people actually going into libraries, and we're seeing the hours being cut and the budgets because of that. So it's kind of neat to see in an urban environment that they're actually growing, but in other areas, it's kind of the opposite.
Wait, 650,000 people in all of Wisconsin?
No. Wyoming.
Oh, in Wyoming. Okay, thank you. I was like, that can't be right. Milwaukee has more than that. Okay, Wyoming. Right. That makes more sense.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I love the idea that libraries are having a resurgence. I love the idea that they could continue to be a force for public good. I love libraries. I love going to them now. And we've got a local library here that's pretty hopping. Like, there's always stuff going on. They've always got readings and authors and just stuff going on all the time there. They haven't quite jumped onto this, let's get lots of cool hardware and give people tools they need. But just to sort of finish this up, Sarah, do you feel like there's how well are libraries adapting to this, to the new way things need to be done, to install this base of technology, to get excited about that? Do you think that's happening at a rate that's acceptable?
Acceptable, yes. Ideal, no. I think that just in the last year or two, we've seen a lot more libraries really hop to it and realize we can't go through the pace of change like we had been, where it might take, you know, 2 or 3 years to make a decision. Now it's like you got 2 or 3 days to make a decision. And so I am seeing more and more people jumping on things faster, and I'm really proud for people for kind of reengineering the way they think to allow us to do that. So I think there's a bright future. I do. And I want a job in the future, so I'm just going to have to say that, right?
No, but I think libraries are the perfect place to become the new community center for the non-athletic stuff. You know, libraries shouldn't be going and adding a pool in a gymnasium, I don't think, but hackerspaces and 3D printers and things that help with the mind. We undervalue that sometimes, at least in the United States. And I think libraries are perfectly positioned because they are one of the most popular and always have been one of the most popular civic offerings that have ever been made. And so it makes perfect sense to me. I think this is a fairly safe prediction. I hope it becomes true in the way that you want it to come true.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yep. Let's move on to Josh. Your short-term prediction, something you think happens rather short-term, next few years or so. What do you think?
All right. Well, I would say that in the next 10 years, desktop computers are still going to be important. Even though we've got Moore's Law going on and we've got more and more power coming in, we've got Palm and laptop devices that, you know, are more powerful than the computers that we saw, you know, 5 to 6 years ago, there's still going to be very much a big space for the classic desktop, just because people are going to find ways to use more power. I mean, how many USB ports are on the back of your stinking desktop, and how many peripherals do you have? I mean, I've got like 7 around me right now. And there are things that mobile computing and laptop devices are just not going to be able to do. And to go forward on that, I think the next real improvement that we are going to see in the next 10 years is going to be with the display technologies. If you look past the past 20 years, and I'd see how we've gone from CRTs to LCDs, and now we're getting up to, you know, 120 hertz LCDs, LED backlit. We're going to start, you know, seeing, you know, and then the like the iPhone, it's got some, you know, insane amount of dots per inch as compared to your regular monitors. We're going to see that increase, and while we may not go into, you know, truly holographic type things that we may see on Star Trek or other science fiction shows, we're going to see a huge amount of improvement in that in just these next 10 years. And pushing that is going to be, you know, better speeds on the internet, so we have higher definition video, pictures. And the guys like NVIDIA and Intel, they're going to be pushing this stuff too, because they need something to eat up the horsepower of their products. And this visual computing is one area that is just going to see a huge amount of growth in the next few years.
I tend to agree. There's this feeling always that we're getting into the, you know, smaller and smaller devices, handhelds and tablets and whatever, and that this is going to be the future of computing. And I think people are making a mistake by assuming that that means it's the future of all computing. It certainly may be part of the future of consumption computing, if that's even a phrase or a term. But I really believe that maybe it becomes more specialized or whatever, but I see it every day. The work I do, I can't do without a bunch of USB ports, without a couple of FireWire ports. I can't do it without this big Wacom thing attached to everything. I can't do it without all my mixer stuff and mic stuff. It's not possible for me to do this in any other way. And those kinds of people like me and people doing much cooler stuff than I'm doing, are going to always need some sort of rig, some sort of specialized computer setup that will let them change things and modify things and get it in a way that it works best for them, that just some tablet or handheld is not going to do for them. And the only issue is that's always come up on this show and in other conversations is we're seeing that move from that used to be the mass market platform and product, and it's moving away from being mass market into a specialized market. What does that, Josh, do to prices? Are we all just going to get hung to dry at some point because it's going to be much more expensive to build these parts when we're not manufacturing as many or shipping out as many because less people are buying, you know, a big rig to use the way we use them?
Well, if you think that there's, what, 6.9 billion people in the world, and the way technology is growing and changing, I don't think computer sales are going to hit a spot where it says, you know, with these larger desktop components, the prices are going to be going up because we make so many fewer. Well, no, I think that a bad year for the PC industry is seeing 5% growth. And I don't think that we're going to see all that many bad years going forward for the next 10. So even if you're only seeing 1% to 2% growth, it's still going to be, I mean, they're going to be manufacturing millions and millions of boards, processors, GPUs, whatever. And so, no, we're not going to get hung out to dry. And in fact, the prices are just going to continue to get cheaper because manufacturing gets better. We've got more people actually buying them because we've got areas in Africa, a large amount of people in India and China who still do not have the type of computing power that they want. So it's still going to grow. It's not going to be the explosive growth that we saw throughout the 90s, but it is going to be very steady, and I just don't see us paying more for even more powerful things than we have today.
Yeah, I think we're too quick to write these things off sometimes. I mean, a desktop today, like a pretty nice, you know, mid-range gaming desktop, costs you less than a desktop did in 1985. And that's a desktop that can do a hell of a lot more than the one from 1985. And that one from 1985 actually was in $1985, which means it's a lot more expensive. So, you know, the prices issue is in relation to, well, what am I going to pay for a laptop? What am I going to pay for a tablet? But as far as like what you get for your money, you're still getting a lot for your money. And I think desktops have reached a stabilization phase. I kind of see them as the spore. Or actually, they're the mushroom that's putting off the spores. So as we realize that, well, the desktop can do everything, but if I put it in this form factor, like a tablet, or I put it in this form factor, like a set-top box, then those functions work better. The desktop loses that reason, but it doesn't lose all its reasons because it can do all kinds of things, and we're constantly inventing new things for it to do. So while it may not be the way it was in the 90s, where if you want a computer, you get a desktop. In fact, I think if you want a computer right now, you probably get a laptop. That's where people start. There are still very good reasons to get a desktop, and I think there always will be. And I think that's one of the, Josh, you pointed out, one of the best reasons is the flexibility. The fact that you can do things that you don't know you want to do with it because it has 15 USB slots and is expandable, and you can pop out a graphics card and put a new one in, which you can't do as easily with a laptop, and you can't do it all with your iPad, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the one thing that we got to look at is that we're going to see a lot more form factors coming out for the traditional desktop PC. We're kind of already seeing that. We see like the Asus Transformer and Transformer 2, the one that's coming out. It's a tablet. You hook it into a keyboard, and it turns into a laptop. And I think we're going to see a little bit more differentiation of the different form factors for the desktop. So it's not just going to be a big gray or beige box. And it's
it really hasn't been for some time. That's kind of a fading stereotype, really.
Yeah, and so I think we're going to see a lot of more OEMs do a little bit more about design. And I think that's one area that Apple has obviously just been fantastic at is design, and I think we're going to see more and more PC manufacturers start, you know, kind of taking that idea and moving it along, and we're going to see some really interesting ideas in the next 5 years, and in 10, I mean, you're just going to have this whole huge amount of products to choose from, however it's going to fit your lifestyle. I mean, right now we have desktops, we've got small form factors, we've got HTPCs, and you know, I can really only see that exploding out as we have more and more niches that these, you know, powerful, small, huge amounts of memory machines can give us in our everyday lives. I mean, maybe we'll have one that's a toaster oven as well, and they'll put in some high-end GPU and processor, and that's going to be the heating element.
I was surprised those wall socket computers didn't catch on more. A bunch of those came out in the early part of the 2000s where you could put a processor and an Ethernet port into something that just plugged right into the wall with a USB outlet, and then you could daisy chain stuff and just run everything off of something of a computer small enough to just plug into a wall. But I think people realized, we'll just go right to a laptop from that. But you're right. There's all kinds of form factors that are yet to be experimented with and some that are already very popular. Sarah, do you use a desktop, or where do you see a desktop fitting in what you do?
I haven't had a desktop in probably 8 years. Yeah. Laptop only and smartphone, and then that's been plenty for me. I mean, I'm starting to move away from the laptop toward the tablet with a USB or Bluetooth keyboard, but I don't feel the need for a desktop anymore. I use one at work just because that's what they give me at work. Mm-hmm. But my preference is always to have something that can be with me wherever I am.
What about the public? Do you see uses for desktop in some of that creation space that you were talking about? Are there reasons to have it there?
Probably, simply because it would be easier to have it be more robust hardware to be able to do the stuff we'd want it to do. And right now, that's pretty much what we have is desktops. We have laptops that we check out to the kids and stuff too. But
that sounds dangerous.
No, they're cool with it. I mean, we get good? Those little Toughbook right. things, you know, they can sit on it. You know,
oh, you get that Toughbook. Nice. Yeah. All right. Excellent.
Sarah does do gaming, Titus. Sorry.
Titus in the chat room was saying she doesn't do games. But you game on your laptop?
Yes.
What are you laughing at?
No, I'm not laughing at her. I'm laughing because it's always funny to me when people assume that that A, girls don't play video games, or B, that it can't reach into other kinds of systems. So
yeah,
I know, for
laptops,
example, Josh,
how could you possibly game?
I know, great, crazy, right? But like, Josh, you're all into PCs. Do you game, Josh? Are you a gamer?
I try to game as much as I can, but I think like for the past 3 years since I adopted two little boys, my gaming time has gone downhill dramatically.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Your game is raising two little boys, it sounds like.
Yeah. Right, yeah, that's a tough game. It's hard to level up and get the right XP. But I just think it's important to mention gaming in this conversation just briefly, because that is an area where we will continue to see where the high power stays, where we're going to see PCs are still going to get manufactured. People are going to still want to spend the money to get a good high-powered PC. It's kind of it bridges the gap over console generations, and it's still this sort of mainstay of innovative gaming, and I don't see that changing at all. So that's one way that I think Josh's, prediction is steadfast. I think that will help bore that up.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsors. Ford, one of their latest technologies that sometimes seems like it's from the future, is Ford Sync with My Ford Touch and Wi-Fi connectivity. So you already know about Ford Sync if you've watched at least a couple of TWiT programs. It's the way to talk to your car. Tell it what to do, and it'll play things and give you directions and all kinds of good stuff like that. Now they can establish an internet connection with a Wi-Fi hotspot. In other words, turn your car into a rolling Wi-Fi hotspot. What you do is plug in a portable wireless access card from one of the wireless carriers into a USB port located in the center armrest console. It's actually turning your car into a desktop because it has a USB port. You plug this in, you got a Wi-Fi hotspot. Or in fact, if you have a BlackBerry, you can connect to the hotspot wirelessly with your BlackBerry. Next, connect up to 5 Wi-Fi enabled devices to that hotspot. Not if you're driving, of course, but all the passengers can have their tablets and their phones out, and even their laptops. Help, bring a desktop, plug it into the cigarette lighter, and you can get on via Wi-Fi. They can connect all of that stuff without any additional subscription or expense. Ford Sync with My Ford Touch featuring Wi-Fi connectivity is available in the 2012 Ford Focus, and you can learn more about it by going to ford.com/technology. We thank Ford for their support of Forecast. On to the long-term predictions. These are the longer view, more in 100 years we'll all be in flying cars sorts of predictions. And Josh, we'll start with you this time. When you look in the long term, what do you think?
This sounds a little sad to me, but we're starting to look around and see more that the things that physics is giving to us. And unfortunately, I think that our overall interest in outer space exploration, while the interest will be there, we'll just not be able to express it nearly as optimistically as we were possibly hoping. I think that we are instead probably going to focus more on inner space type exploration, and that would be creating these virtual worlds, experiencing alive through these virtual worlds and growing and living in these things. Now, I realize that the real world is nice and you should probably exist there and have a job, but we don't know what the economy is going to be like in 100 years. We look back at the things, 100 years ago, and I was thinking of this because the heat went out in my car and my wife was very, very angry, saying, we're living like cavemen here. It's cold in Wyoming. Our children are going to freeze. And then I think back to when the Mormon people were having the carts and going across the plains in negative 30 degree weather and surviving that way. And I'm thinking, boy, they really wish they had a car that had no heat. So in the future, I don't think that people are going to work nearly as much. And again, we're going to go into an existence that is much more exciting because it is virtual as compared to the humdrum all around the world. And again, I just don't see space exploration going to be at the forefront of where we are as people. And especially when you look as a whole, where our society is kind of going, we don't seem to interact with our environment nearly as much as we used to. So, I mean, how many people go on camping trips these days as compared to 50 years ago?
Jason Howell goes on a camping trip like every week.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I mean, there are people who
but
do
he's
that.
He's an exception, yeah. Yeah.
So that's my bold prediction.
So, Josh, how does exploring the oceans more, figuring out technologies to get us deeper and deeper, maybe even expanding human habitats there? How does that fit though within your vision? Because this is, a lot of people argue, well, we're not going to go to space anymore. Instead, we're going to focus what money we do have or do want to spend on figuring out ways to sort of explore more of the ocean, more of this sort of underwater civilization idea. Does that fit into your prediction at all?
It could. It really depends on how our population grows. If we look at heavily industrialized and educated countries, we see their populations are slowly going down and decreasing. It's only in these third world and growing countries that are not entirely industrialized or, you know, have a higher level of education that we see population growth in. You know, I would wonder if 50, 75 years from now that we've you know, conquered a lot of the educational issues. We've been able to connect these areas of larger population growth so that they become more educated, having more stable type economy in those areas. It's not just, you know, hand to mouth type existences where you need more and extra people around for highly labor intensive activities. And so, you know, I wonder if in that time we won't start to see the overall population of the Earth slowing down and going into a negative way. So you really wonder, you know, 100 years from now, if the population is 5 billion pretty happy, educated, you know, mostly middle class world, are we going to really need to utilize a lot of that extra space in the oceans? Will it still be economically viable to do that? Will, you know, there's so many questions. You're kind of looking at some micro, economic issues that you just cannot predict at this time.
Sarah, what do you think? Do you agree that we're sort of turning inward more and dealing not Interspace, the Dana Carvey movie, but Interspace, the sort of virtual world and the thinking and the mental world versus interacting with the rest of our world outside?
Well, I'll go back to science fiction for my inspiration because that's where we all go. If you think about what
at least here we do, right?
if you think about the way that the future is usually portrayed, you've got these super dense city centers, right? Super urban areas, skyscrapers, high population density. And then sometimes there are still middle of nowhere places out there. And I really think that's where we're headed, where San Francisco will be five times as tall, but it's still limited to the space that it's in. And you're still going to have rural places that you can get to. It'll just probably be farther away from these urban centers, which will continue to sprawl outward. But I still do think you're basically going to have the same ratio of open space and rural space. I still think there's that need, that human need to find a middle of nowhere.
So we'll still want to go outside.
We like outside.
A little bit. But what about space? Outside. Are we going to go? He's saying no space. I hate to agree, but I kind of agree.
I agree with that as well.
Oh, did I say Dana Carvey? It's Martin Short. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
But really, no space?
No space. That's three of us
Scott,
on space.
No space?
Scott?
Really?
No, I don't know about no space. You say no space, and it seems like in the current climate of things, it kind of makes sense. Like, it's really expensive, and there's not a lot of gain other than the kind of a gee whiz, look at us exploring factor. And we don't even have somebody like the Russians to compete with anymore to get there first. I guess maybe we do with China. I don't know. But so I understand it's like kind of there's not a big gain to it, but a little piece of me, and maybe that piece of me is still 12 years old inside and really wants to see this, but I really want to keep looking for life and planets that could sustain life and, you know, exploring that way. And maybe we just get better at telescopes and maybe we get better at, I don't know, sending probes and that's cheaper and that's how it works. But I would really like to see us in a spaceship. And
I would like to see us in a spaceship too, but doesn't mean we're going. I mean, I think
you're right.
Josh, are you
you're
saying
right.
No space or are we overstating it? Are you saying it's
well, you
decline?
Know, I've got my very bold, far-reaching prediction that actually moves beyond that. So, I mean, we're not going to give it up totally because, okay. I mean, we have to launch satellites. If we ever get fusion going, the moon is a fantastic source of tritium, I believe.
Harsh and mistress, eventually that's, but great with tritium.
Pardon?
Harsh mistress, but great with tritium.
Exactly. But we're going to see more industry move out there. But I don't see us going out farther than the moon's orbit. Now, I'll go into this further in our bold prediction,
right.
But you know, we're not going to totally ignore it because it's still so very important to us. I mean, how many satellites do we have running up there? And you know, again, we're going to need a space program in case one of those really large rocks comes hurtling at the Earth, and we need to get it out of the way. So, I mean, these are areas that we will work on and we're going to do, but pure exploration, trying to get a Mars colony going, I can get that later.
Not
but,
so much.
But for 100 years, I just still don't see it.
All right, well, let's move over to your long-term prediction so we can get back to the crazy prediction soon. What do you got for us, Sarah, when you look down farther, hundreds of years or so?
Unfortunately, what I see is the Brave New World-style police state.
Aldous Huxley just was ahead of his time.
Yes. So that's the simple answer. I mean, we're just seeing law enforcement technology advancing so quickly for tracking, visualizing data, enforcement. And you combine that with all of the biological information that we're keeping, the potential for chip implants that people are already using, and, you know, how people are responding very negatively to that and either using the implants or being so terrified that states are passing laws against them. You know, California has a law against it. So does North Dakota, Wisconsin, and Virginia. In terms of employers and others, this vague others forcing you to have RFID chips implanted under your skin. And I really think that the pushback from people against the idea of being tracked is counter to what we're actually seeing people do in allowing themselves to be tracked without a physical device. So we're all very happy to check in on Foursquare and post photos of the expensive electronic equipment.
Well, they might not need the expensive equipment to track us if we do that enough.
We might just be stupid, right? Yeah. It might just be our own stupidity that leads to the police state. But I do think that there's just really a way for government agencies to have access to information, private information. And I think we're seeing it start to morph into other things as law enforcement technology does continue to evolve, where it does put us in a place where, as a society, we're going to either have to push back really fast now and hard, or we're going to have to just accept that all of these ideas of privacy and civil rights have been an illusion all along, and they're just going to go away. And I actually think that people are lazy, because we're all lazy by heart and by nature, and so I think that we will give up a certain amount of privacy and security for convenience. And so I do see us losing our civil rights really slowly.
Scott, you remember hearing this a lot on the 11-12, year 11-12 versions of Forecast. People were complaining about the advances in metallurgy, the rise of feudalism. It's kind of the same thing all over again, right? Which is,
I know,
the technology comes along and falls too far in one direction, and the pendulum swings. And I'm being a little silly here, but it does remind me of what happened in the Middle Ages in Europe, which is all the technology was in the hands of a few people, and they were able to hold sway for centuries before it finally started to swing back the other way.
I think it's funny you picked our 99th episode to let people know that we've been in cryogenic freeze for so long. But I'm weird about this issue, because, you know, when people talk now about how, well, now anybody can track where you're at because you've got your phone and you got location services on, and that piece of privacy just went out the window. You don't even realize it because it's so convenient and so helpful. And I part of me goes, I don't like that at all now that I'm being told that. But then another part of me says, you know, what am I going to do? And that's kind of that lazy side maybe that you're talking about. I don't know if it's so much lazy as it is, I kind of accept it because there's other benefits to it. When people rise up, it's when they're getting screwed, or when something's not working right, or when the laziness is offset by the fact that they, I don't know, can't earn any more money, or they can't, whatever the thing is. That's when we get mad at the police state, or that's when we get mad at the lack of privacy, is because it is making our lives worse than they were before. I wonder what we'll do if this just keeps going down that road and we continue to be so convenient in everything that we do that we don't see it as this authoritarian, horrible police state. We just see it as the way things are, but look how good our lives are. So I don't know. I'm really torn on the whole issue.
Well, I think the point at which it changes is when you start getting arrested or picked up for doing things that you didn't think were wrong, but now the government has decided are wrong, and they can now notice that you're smoking pot because your lovely little smartphone picks up the particles, and boom, you know, you get arrested, you know, and before that wouldn't have happened. So I think it's going to take stuff like that to happen before people do decide, hey, this enough is enough, and stand up for our rights.
Although a lot of people argue back and say, well, but if you are doing something that's wrong, if it's against the law and you know that smoking pot is against the law, then you should be arrested. And that's just the system getting more efficient. I think what worries me is when the powers are given to the government or to the police beyond what they really need. And those can be used against people who aren't committing crimes. And we don't speak out about it. And we were close to that in the 50s in the hunt for communists, and we're close to that again right now, where the government starts to say, well, we want these overreaching powers because we want to go after those guys. And people say, well, I guess it's okay for me to give up some of my rights and be surveilled by the government because I'm afraid of those guys too. It happened with the communists. It's mm-hmm. happening again with the terrorists. That's what worries me.
Yes.
It's not that we have the technology and it can be used for this. As long as there's a tension between people saying, yeah, you could use it for that, but we're going to use the technology against you to stop you. It's when the law starts saying, yeah, we're not going to let anyone use that technology to fight against us because we want to stop these guys, which then gives them the opportunity, without your knowledge, to crack down on somebody for doing something that isn't against the law because it's an opinion somebody doesn't like. And we saw that for a while, and I still think we see it, with the president when he goes to speak. Anyone who's speaking against the president gets moved away to a different area. And that doesn't that's kind of an example of a non-technological way that's like, well, okay, it is for the safety of the president, but you should be able to speak your mind in a safe and public way and not be moved off to a camp halfway across the city. Josh, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, it's pretty scary. The technology is at the point where they can track you, see what you're doing, and I mean, people are not really private anymore. I mean, how often do you sign on to Facebook or Google Plus or whatever, and you get to hear about their latest bowel movement or what socialists?
I never see anybody talk about their bowel movements. That's always used as an example. Have you actually seen that? That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, guy posted the other day. It's like, thank you, cheeseburger. Best bowel movement ever.
That's awful.
Thank you for sharing.
Unfollow.
Hey, you know what? I've got some great friends. Yeah, you got to meet them sometime. But, you're putting your life online, and everybody's going to read it, and people don't care. And eventually it's going to get to the point where, maybe as a society we'll be able to balance out how many people get killed by these threats, by terrorists or just crazy people or sociopaths who are just don't care about others and race down the road pell-mell and serial killers and all these other negative people who are willing to take the innocent life, take the people who, have nothing involved with what's going on. Eventually, we're probably going to balance out and say, is our cost of freedom enough that we can say, 500 people died this year due to, these factors, whether they're bad people or terrorists or serial killers or drunk drivers or whatever. I think that there will be a balance, but it just seems that I do agree that balance will probably just keep moving towards safety and safety. I mean, how many times do you turn on the news and say, a tragedy, this 5-year-old girl was run over by this guy who had just gotten out of the bar, and there's outrage against drunk driving, and we give a little bit more of our freedoms away as we become more and more affected by these individual tragedies. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but
we're reactive as heck as a society, right? Like we wait for things to happen and they're so bad, and everyone starts going, change the regulation, and they freak out about it only after the fact. We don't really prepare very well.
As a collective society, it's like we've only moved one step beyond object permanence. We don't understand cause and effect at a distance. It's like, oh, that happened, and so that we must do this because that means it happens all the time.
Right.
I get in these fights on Twitter all the time with people where I say, I'm switching to Firefox or whatever, and they'll say, or the flu shot. I got in a big argument about the flu shot. They're like, I took a flu shot once and I still got the flu, so I'm never going to get it again. It's like, well, that's not a good sample, and correlation is not causation, but the society as a whole doesn't seem to know that correlation is not causation,
especially on Twitter.
especially on Twitter. All right, let's move on to the crazy predictions, and Sarah, we'll start with you. In 2000 years, we'll all be made of cheese is my example of a crazy prediction. What is your actual crazy prediction?
The world is going to end because of spiders.
Is that right?
Yes. So,
knew it.
I don't know if people saw. Well, spiders and yeast.
We'll never become cheese people because the spiders will ruin us all.
So yeah. I don't know if people
explain,
saw.
Explain, please.
Yeah,
yes.
I know. I must explain. No, there's too much. I must sum up. Okay. So scientists in ETH Zurich and the University of California, San Francisco, just in the last week or so created, or week or two, these little cyborg cells of brewer's yeast, right? So just brewer's yeast that can get switched on or off using a light. So they can turn on the yeast and allow it to produce, reproduce and produce itself, and produces a specific protein that regulates gene expression. So then they have a little cyborg reporter molecule that they jump in there that keeps track of the yeast's activity and reports back to the computer once things are as they should be, and then the light goes off. So it's a closed communication loop with a biological entity, a single cell. You know, that's crazy. So they were able to take control of the yeast and make it do what they want it to do. And that control might let us someday have control over the cells that we have in our body. Okay, step one. Here comes the spiders. All right, so more scientists, because it all comes from scientists, and these scientists were in Germany. Everything's coming out of Europe, notice, mm-hmm. right? It's all going to be spiders in Europe, and then it'll spread out. So
that's the spider epicenter.
Yes, the spider epicenter would be... Yes, somewhere in between Germany and Zurich. So they created a little robot spider using what's functionally a really advanced 3D printer, using this process called selective laser sintering. That makes me sound really smart. Mm-hmm. So first off, they print these little spiders out, and the spiders can walk and crawl and climb and actually jump using these little air pistons in their legs. Ooh. And so I don't know if everyone's seen Stargate and you remember the replicators, mm-hmm. right? So think like the replicators. The replicators are real. And because they're made on functionally a 3D printer, you could use the spiders to create more spiders with minimal human intervention. So my theory is that the yeast are going to meet the spiders mm-hmm. somewhere between Germany and Zurich, and then they're going to make the first sentient AI, and the spiders are going to replicate like the replicators, and we're going to die.
So these printed out spiders become smart spiders.
Yes,
with smart enough to print themselves out,
right?
Because of the yeast.
Because of the yeast.
And then we all die.
And then we all die.
To some.
Oh, the replicators! I thought you meant Trek replicator, right? And they were all like, it's almost like dot matrix.
No, not the
people.
Thing you say T Earl Grey hot to.
Right, right. I remember now. It was like dot, it reminded me of dot matrix people, and in fact. MASH's David Ogden Steers was one of the replicants. Anyway, that's a totally cool thing. But spiders are terrible. I don't want anything to do with your prediction. I hate them. I hate them already. I don't want to see any more of them. Josh, what do you think about a future of replicated spiders causing your particular demise there in Wyoming?
Well, it's probably too cold for them here anyway. we'll just, you know, go into our bunkers throughout the summer months, come back out in winter. Plant our genetically enhanced crops that can grow at negative 20 degrees, and we'll be fine, and we'll have really large firearms.
Wow.
Not that we don't have
flamethrower in Wyoming. Can that stop the spiders, Sarah?
Flamethrower, well, yeah, they're printed out of kind of like a plastic resin thing right now, so if they continue to be stupid and print themselves out of that, yeah, that'll work.
Sounds like I need to buy a bunker in Wyoming. That's what it sounds like to me. What are property values like out there right now?
Cheap,
yeah.
There you go.
Because we didn't get hit like the rest of the country.
Well, because nobody knows about the spider bunker safety yet. There's going to be a run pretty soon.
Except Dick Cheney's got. Doesn't Dick Cheney have a big ranch out there? He's probably got a nice bunker in there, hiding from spiders.
He probably does. Yeah. He's got a nice fly fishing spot too. So he said.
I hear 1% of Dick Cheney owns 99% of the bunkers. Oh, God. All right, let's move on, Josh, to your crazy prediction. One really far out there forecast. Lay it on us. What do you got?
Okay. I think that in the future, when we have technology to actually get out into outer space relatively cheaply, we're still going to look at places like Venus and Mars and think, hey, let's terraform these, and because we need to expand. We need the Lebensraum. Is that correct?
Yeah, living space? Yeah, German for living space, right.
Yes. And I think that, in fact, that's going to be bust. We're going to look at the physics behind getting these planets hospitable, and it's just going to be too much. Mars has got, what now, a nearly solid core, so it has no magnetic field. Thereby, the solar wind tends to blow off a lot of the atmosphere, and not to mention the radiation that just comes pouring down and all these other solar lovely particles that we don't have to worry about because we have a robust magnetosphere. Looking at places like Venus, getting that, 60 atmospheres to one atmosphere, you know, lessening the amount of pressure and cooling it down is just going to be too much. The energy expense is just tremendous for either of those things, and I don't think that we're going to find a way to do it anytime soon within, you know, thousands and thousands of years. But that does not mean we will totally not expand. I think that we will see a lot of habitats within the moon's orbit. We're going to see some limited colonization of the moon. But I don't see, you know, the big Star Trek, we're going to go out and terraform this place and be able to live on it. And we're going to have this, you know, really hefty Mars colony that has billions and billions of people. I think it's going to be quite the opposite. I do believe that we will see a population, you know, stagnation and eventually a shrink. And we kind of look back through history, not just at population, but at other things. I mean, in the 70s, we had this, you know, the global cooling is going to kill the world. We're going to go through another ice age. Now it's global warming, and now we're talking overpopulation. And I imagine thousands of years down the line, people are going to be panicking about the world's population decreasing, and in 10,000 years, there will only be a million human beings left because nobody wants more than one kid, if even that. So that's my big thing. We're not going to terraform. We're going to have, you know, some still space exploration in that. But as a population, I think we're just going to shrink it at some point.
We're basically screwed without warp drive, in my opinion. Sarah, where do you think we're going to be as a population in, say, 10,000 years?
I think it's going to be almost nil. I think we're going to start seeing population shrinkage within probably 500 years, actually. I don't think it's that far out. I think we just can't sustain what we're doing, and I don't think we're self-controlled enough to limit our consumption of the resources to what we actually have on hand. So I think we will see population forcibly through disease or famine or natural disaster just really start to peter off. I think we're right on here.
Best bets are that we peak out at 9 billion, if I'm remembering right. And I can't remember the year, but it's not that far off that we hit peak population. And then we either stabilize or decline. Now, it depends on who you ask whether they will agree with you or not. Some people think the carrying capacity of Earth is about where we're at. That we're getting close to going over it. Other people say the carrying capacity of Earth is like 10, 11 billion. So if we peak out at 9 billion, we'll be fine. That's one of those things that we would like to get right.
Yeah. Well, here's a little
and not go over whatever it is.
We won't know until
being.
We get there, though. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, hopefully we don't get there. But if we get there, we'll know. And that's a bad way
right.
to know.
Right.
You're right.
That's a terrible way to know.
We have a huge world. I mean, I hate to say this, to put it in perspective. If you gave everybody 1,500 square feet of land just to have a living space, you can fit all the world's population in Texas. Now, 1,500 square feet.
Yeah, but
not
then everybody'd live in Texas.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying anything bad about Texas as a culture. I'm just saying there's a lot. If you've been, I lived in Texas for 6 years. There's a lot of places out there that if I got my square footage, I would not want to live there because there's no water and there's no vegetation. It's not, you know.
Calm down. I think you're nitpicking. Let him make his point.
Yeah, no, but go ahead and make your point. Is it my problem with this is like, is there enough space for us to actually live in a sustainable way? So go ahead, take it from there.
I think so. I think we've got enough, you know, space and most importantly, agricultural productivity to be able to handle a couple billion more. But then once you start, hitting around the 9 billion, you're dealing with a lot of other issues, and namely power generation. Mm-hmm. You're going to still have increased fossil fuel burning. And while I'm not, you know, one of the global warming alarmists, I still think that throwing extra carbon up into the air and pollution and, you know, changing a lot of the balance in there is still not a bad thing. Still not a great thing. So I think, the other issues, sanitation, power production, it's far going to outweigh things like food production and actual living space.
Yeah, we have room. It's just everybody wants to crowd into huge city centers, and they want to all be there, and they all want to find their, you know, whatever it is they're going to find there, and that just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and sweatier and grosser and smokier and horrible, and that just gets worse and worse and worse. But yeah, you're right. There's big swaths of space up there in Wyoming, for example, that nobody's, you know, no one's there. It's true of here. It's true of much of the western United States, and unless you're in a populated area, then it, maybe you can't even choose a place that's out in the boonies, because if you do, well, then there's no work there. So you, again, gravitate to wherever all the people are because maybe there's more work there. I mean, there's just so many issues that I can see, especially cramming us all in Texas. Mathematically speaking, totally accurate thing. People bring it up all the time. Totally true. But it just doesn't account for the just thousands of problems that idea sort of has. And it's just interesting. It would be really fun, Tom, who's doing the National Book Writing Month. You ought to do your next story about everybody cramming into 1,500 square feet in Texas.
Oh, I would love to read that. It's so hot there already. Can you imagine if 9 billion people were crammed into Texas?
Dude, blah.
In the summer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then my brother Matt, who makes weird Korean food, would be just grossing out the whole block because his food stinks. And the other guy would be complaining about
it. I don't know, though. Kimchi tacos in Austin are pretty awesome.
Yeah, I wonder how really Korean they are.
The food would be fantastic.
That's true.
Yeah,
but yeah, I would love to read a really good sci-fi take on that future, because that's a scary mess for sure.
I'm halfway through my book on my dogs fighting crime and solving mysteries, so I'll have to save that one for next time.
Oh, good. Fantastic.
All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor, Netflix. Netflix.com/twit gives you 30 days free of unlimited television shows and movies. Check it out. You will enjoy it. And if you already enjoy it, give it to someone else who will enjoy it, because the URL works for everyone. That's the secret. Shh. So tell everyone. Well, I guess it's not a secret. Netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Forecast. We got to finish up with some four questions, Scott.
Four questions. That's where we ask our guests rapid fire style four questions each. They have not the right to slow down. They must answer these from the gut and do it quickly. I'm going to ask my four questions of Josh. Josh, are you sitting comfortably?
I am.
All right,
here
you go.
I have my hemorrhoid pad and everything.
Fantastic. I like your future. 200 years from now, what PC game will be considered the greatest of all time?
Elder Scrolls 19.
Oh,
it's when they suddenly break through into Wyoming with dragons, and it's very epic, and they've got great scenery, and there's only 500,000 people there as compared to the billions that you have to interact with Halo 34.
Elder Scrolls 19, the Wyoming-ing.
Oh, man. Scary game. Now, some look forward to the McRib. Like, right now, that's a thing that's happening because it's coming out again, right? What horrible sandwich will McDonald's release periodically 100 years from now? It'll be called the McWhat?
The McSphincter.
Ew. Well, so they just renamed
made with
the McRib.
The finest 100% round meat.
Mm-hmm. No, they're just, Tom, they're just getting honest about what the McRib
exactly.
is.
It's just truth in naming.
Exactly. What scares you more? A race of super mutant space gerbils or a horrible smell that no one can find on an 18-hour flight to Australia?
I think the horrible smell, because I travel with two children all the time, and I'm usually horrified already enough.
I'm kind of with you on that.
Because they're always eating McSphincters.
They are always emanating smells, and someday somebody will find out, point their finger at me, and yell at that I'm the parent with the children that smell like that.
It's him! Yeah. Him.
Nothing worse than like on a coach flight like that, but hey, what are you going to do? Will we ever be comfortable with only robots preparing our food?
Have you watched Gordon Ramsay lately?
Zing.
Zing. Take that, Gordon Ramsay. And that concludes your four questions. Congratulations, you win. Tom, over to you.
All right, Sarah, are you sitting comfortably?
Sure.
Good, then we'll begin. Question number one. Will the library at Alexandria burn down again?
No. It's all made out of fire-retardant material, and all the books, you know, are digitized. So even if it does burn down, there's still some copy of it somewhere.
Okay, good. Question number two. In 1,000 years, what will the dominant mode of transportation be?
Jetpack. It's just got to be the jetpack.
Finally. We're getting the jetpack.
Yes.
Who doesn't want a jetpack? Actually, that sounds dangerous.
No, it's not. It's just fire shooting.
I'll be that old man. They'll be like, why don't you take your jetpack, Grandpa? I'll be like, nah, I'm not taking that stupid thing. Okay, break your bones.
Give me my segue.
Question number three. Eating gravy will mean what in the year 2565?
Eating vegan gravy, because all best gravy is vegan.
But it's still food. But it's still a food.
It's still a food.
It won't be a euphemism for something.
No, it's not.
No.
Where are you going with this question?
I don't know. I'm just, you know, slang changes.
No, it's still gravy, but it's,
kids
it's
say
good
things.
Non-animal-oriented gravy.
All right.
Yes.
Question number four. How long will we have paper books?
we won't have paper books until all the trees are gone and all the paper disintegrates over time, because there are still people who like the feel of a paper book in their hand.
So as long as we have trees.
Yes, it will not be the dominant form of information dissemination. But
well, actually, we have, like, you can make elephant dung paper.
That's true. So yeah, as long as we have elephants. You can make it out of grass. You can make it out of all sorts of things. So all yeah, right. Never mind. It'll be forever. Forever.
Forever. I like it. I like paper books myself. I use e-books, but I like paper books. You don't have to pick a side. They're not at war.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. That's it for our four questions. Thank you both. Really enjoyed having you on the show today. Scott Johnson, thank you as well for being our co-host.
Always, Tom. It's a blast always hanging out with you on a Monday. Great guest today.
Of course, Josh, PC Perspective and PCPer.com are the place to find you, but let folks know where else they can find you online.
I don't think it's legal for me to actually say it.
Online.
Oh, online.
Yeah, sorry,
yeah. You can hold me at jwalrath@pcper.com. Otherwise, I'm there. I'm Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific time here on twit.tv. So check us out if you have a few extra minutes and want to listen to us ramble on about the latest tech and make fun of Ryan Trout.
Excellent. We're having him on a future forecast, so.
Oh, cool.
You can come taunt him in the
good luck on that.
In the chat room. Also, Sarah Houghton, thank you for joining us. Let folks know where they can find you online.
LibrarianInBlack.net or at the LIB on Twitter.
And Scott Johnson, where can they find you online?
Well, Tom, they can find me everywhere. No, not that's not true. They just can find me at frogpants.com. Yeah, they can do a search.
Let me Google that for you.
If you search for Scott Johnson, I think I am one of the first ones that comes up, and I don't understand how that works. The internet's crazy. I'm an old man. Get off my lawn. But if you want, go to frogpants.com. There's all kinds of stuff happening there. Our morning show, our movie show, our video game shows, all over the map. Something for everyone. Check it out. And thanks again, Tom. Great show tonight.
Number one Google result for Scott Johnson is Extra Life. MyExtraLife.com.
There you go. Oh, read the comic then while you're there.
Yeah. He does comics.
Why not? Yeah.
I'm going to tell people to go to FSLtonight.com if you want the future of sports for people who don't like sports. If you just want to hear people talk about science fiction and fantasy as if it were a sport, go to FSLtonight.com. Confused? You're going to love it. Try it out. FSLtonight.com. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Of course, you can email us with your predictions. We read one on the show each week. Send us an email, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
That would be in the future.
100.
Sort of obvious. Yeah, episode 100.
But it's only 32 years away.
Way.